Now, I think most listeners who followed the show for some time know how skeptical I tend to be about beauty pageants and how generally I just avoid related interviews. But I am making an exception today because the woman who joins me on the yellow couch has proven herself over and over and over again to be so much more than just a pretty face, as the saying goes. She is an astute businesswoman. She has built a formidable media company among many other commercial enterprises. And she's also earned admiration along the way for the way she has refused to be victimized by social media trolls, claiming her right to privacy and her right to her good name. The fact that she happens to have been crowned Miss South Africa in 1994, as we were dubbed the Rainbow Nation, the fact that she was a personal favorite of Madiba's, these have only cemented her status and endeared her to South Africans of all ages and races. Of course, I'm talking about Busetsana Khumalo, who on Monday released her memoir entitled Bussy, My Journey of Hope. And for a woman who has always been very protective of her privacy, it really opens a window wide into her life, into her marriage, her career and her story. And it is such an honor to welcome her to the show and to Cape Talk. Bussy, thank you so much for sharing your time with us this afternoon.
Thank you so much, Pippa. Good afternoon and good afternoon to your listeners.
You said at the start of the book that you've been writing journals for many, many years with the thought in your head that maybe one day you would find the time to write a book. But you're still a full-time working mom. I know I'm not the only one wondering what made you choose to do it now.
Oh my goodness. You know, I have been one to journal for the better part of my adult life, and having won Miss South Africa in 1994, and I love the, you know, the fact that you referred to Madiba, the rainbow nation of Madiba, new democracy, new dispensation, new government, just the intoxicating effect of freedom, and the Zeitgeist of that moment, you know, juxtaposed with my winning the crown in 1994, I was very cognizant and, you know, very aware that it was a very critical time in history. And that at some point in my life, I would have to chronicle that chapter and the journey. And so I've, you know, as I said, journaled, you know, for the better part of my adult life. But when it, you know, I had my daughter at 40, Bontle, my third little munchkin, we call each other cupcakes. I held a beautiful new life in my hands. And Pippa, I began to ask myself a very poignant question, and a question that I've always reflected on, and that was, Busetsana, how will you measure your life? How will you measure your life? Will you measure your life, you know, around the businesses that you've built, around the children that you've been so blessed with, around the jobs that you've created? How will you measure life? What is your life purpose? And I thought, you know, it's important for me to then chronicle my life experiences, what I've been through, especially as a public figure in the last 25 years, the lessons that I've learned, the, you know, tribulations that I've overcome, the good, the bad, and the ugly of being, you know, a public figure and living in a fishbowl. And then I thought to myself, 2019 is probably the right time for me to be able to do that. And why 2019 was, you know, it's of course 25 years of our democracy. It's 25 years of having won the Miss South Africa crown. It's 25 years of me being a television producer. It's 25 years of me being an entrepreneur. It's 25 years of my Christian walk. And of course, I turned 25, I wish, 45 in March. you are listening, you're awake, girl.
I'm smiling. We're all willing to lop off a few years.
I've just tried to chop off a few. And I turned 45 in March, and it just felt that everything was aligned. And everything was just, you know, for this moment, the 2019, into all of what has happened to us as a nation, to me personally, it was a time to be able to literally have my experiences in a literal word and take pen to paper and share my story.
Now, there's so many aspects of your story. I won't be able to talk about all of them in the time we've got, but I want to start a little bit with the reflections of love for your own late mom and dad and your love for your siblings, which just shine throughout this book. And to share with our listeners a bit of a quote, if I may, on what you wrote about the kind of people they were, because you say, one thing I know for sure is that I come from a family of people who truly believed that they could make a difference. People who did not allow fear to get in the the way of their aspirations. They didn't have money or power, but their faith gave them the resilience they needed to keep moving forward. You appear to have had this wonderful combination of being contented with each other and filled with love and satisfaction with the life you had together, but also the sense of looking for opportunities for growth and not just for yourselves. Bas, you write about that moment when you crowned in 1994 and how much it meant not just to you and to your family, but to the nation. Talk to us a little bit about that symbolism of your win being crowned by your whole neighborhood for one. It wasn't just about your triumph at all.
We won the crown. We won the Miss South Africa crown as a community, as a township, as a country. It was our crown. It was not Basetsana at the time, my maiden name, Makhalimele's crown. Just to reflect back on my parents before I delve into what you've just highlighted. Yeah. I was raised in an incredibly close-knit, loving home. My parents were ahead of their time. Yes, they had their 8-to-5. Papa was a bus driver. Mama was a teacher by profession. But my parents were hustlers. And so outside of their, formal jobs, they were entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
They started the first bricklaying company in the township, a construction company, came out of the bricklaying business. They used to build, and extend people's homes in the hood. They literally, I have this recollection of my mom sewing these curtains in the middle of the night on her Singer machine. Mm-hmm. I literally could hear the sounds, as I was writing and reflecting in my stride at 3 a.m., the sounds of my mom making those curtains that they used to go and sell in Kwakwa to teachers. And if we're not, they were not doing that, my parents over the weekends would sell sandwiches at soccer stadiums, ice cream after school when other kids were playing in the street. I became an entrepreneur selling boiled eggs up and down the streets of our neighborhood in Kilani, next to Mzimhlophe. And if you're not doing that, then you're involved in extracurricular activities, whether it was the youth club, the church choir, the beauty pageant. And so pageants in those times were a big thing in the township. Yeah. Boys had soccer and boxing as an outlet, and black girls, pageantry was a big thing. If one took place in the neighborhood, the community hall would be filled to capacity and people rooting for their favorites. And so when I won not only just Miss Soweto, but Miss South Africa, literally the township, Soweto won Miss South Africa. South Africa embraced this new phase of hope. That was Basetsana, Makhalimele at the time. And so, Miss South Africa really catapulted me and gave me a platform that I would have otherwise never have had to realize my dreams. And so with having won the crown, I always say that I really paid tribute to that bold, courageous 20-year-old on that stage in Sun City at the Super Bowl. The woman that I am today at 45, I owe much respect to the courageous youngster that stood there to say, I'm going to take my leap of mm-hmm. faith and try this thing and see where it's going to land me. And of course, it's changed the trajectory of my life in what I've gone on to do as an employer, as somebody who creates jobs, as somebody who's in the creative economy. So it's been such a time of reflection, when I think back, and especially when I was penning my memoir, long hours of just, tears at the moments where the journey was so raw that I would just well up in tears and cry, and my keyboard would stop working. But it was important for me to put all of that down so that somebody then can be able to pick up this book, and when they read my story, they can find some sense of hope. Mm-hmm. I literally wanted to reignite a new sense of hope, because I think we've lost it as a country, as a people, where we are at. Yeah. Because of the challenges we are facing, real challenges that we are facing as a people, we look at gender-based violence, we look at xenophobic attacks, we look at youth unemployment. And so I also try to address those very important issues of national importance in my book, because I've lived through those chapters of my life. And I speak honestly and candidly about all of that. in my book.
You do. I mean, you write so frankly about the abusive relationship with Dingaan Tobela. You write about your experiences at the hands of a stalker whose presence has never been entirely removed from your life. You write from a place of great courage. What was it, you think, that made you feel now's the time to find that courage and to speak out about it? Is it perhaps because of this upwelling we've seen of women saying, it has happened to me, the hashtag Me Too, and also this hashtag of Am I Next? Did you feel almost a sense of obligation to come out and publicly speak about
it? A huge sense of responsibility. Because oftentimes people think public figures, their lives are a bed of roses. I wanted to give gender-based violence a face and a name that it actually looks like Vasutsana Khumalo too.
Yeah.
I was always going to write my story. And in writing my story, I was always going to write about this chapter of my life. But it just, you know, the timing of it all, I suppose, when we look at the rate of femicide in our country, could not have been more apt. We know that every 3 hours a woman is murdered in South Africa. And so I was that always was going to be in a memoir. I was only going to write an honest account. But then, as I said, if we look at the timing of where our nation is at and the evil that we are literally faced with, that voices have to rise up. And we have to own our stories, because in only our stories, only then we regain our power and we take back our power. And then we give somebody a sense of hope to say that, you know what, Bastana survived an abusive relationship. I can walk out. I can still be able to make something of my life because she walked out back when she was that, you know, 20, 21-year-old. Because if I had not left Dingaan Tobela, Pepa, I would be a dead woman today. Sure. I would not be speaking to you on this interview, on this yellow couch this afternoon, had I stayed. So I wanted to be able to ignite that sense of optimism in anyone who's going through whatever challenges that they're facing, whether it's a loss of a baby, whether they've had a miscarriage, whether you've been abused, whether you've been battered, that, you know what, Bastana picked herself up. She went through a serious depression, but she still picked herself up and she's still standing and she got to the other side. It means I too can. I too can find my own voice and I too can find my healing.
I think what you've said is so powerful, and it applies as much to the story of your miscarriages and your struggle towards motherhood as it does to the relationship with Dingaan Tobela, because reading of your heartbreak of trying over and over and the miscarriages and, you know, the premature birth and the loss of those children, that would have broken so many women. And as you write so candidly, it almost broke you, but you held on to hope somehow. And I think for other women reading, as you say, here too is somebody whose life looks perfect, and yet she has been there, she has struggled as I am struggling, and in the end she has three beautiful children and this fairy tale marriage to share with us. It must have been hugely, though, emotionally draining for you to write about particularly the miscarriages and the losses of your family.
It was just such a dark moment and a very raw time when I went into that part of my journey, because let me tell you this, I literally had refused to process it. I buried it. I did not ever want to revisit that chapter. And so to unearth that and to let those emotions come out into the surface and realize just how I had not dealt with them and how it just shook me to the core, I realized that, you know, sooner or later I would have had to do it. And I'm glad that I did it through writing the memoir, because for me then, there was such a catharsis, you know, it was so cathartic for me to be able to cry, and to be able to heal through penning my pain, in black and white, and I literally feel like I've been to therapy having written my memoir. I find my healing, I find my restoration, but the loss of my parents, I was gutted. Because, as I said to you earlier on, I come from a very close-knit, tight family. And so when my dad passed away, because my dad was never sick a day, not a day, had never been to hospital a day in his life, and he has a stroke, and he's in the ICU for 2 weeks, and then he doesn't make it. And 3 years later, my mom, who was the one of ill health, she had had a heart attack and had had a multiple triple valve replace operation. Yeah. And she was well on the mend, and just one injection perforated her heart. When we looked at the post-mortem of what happened, there were days where getting out of bed was impossible, and the days when I didn't get out of bed, when I couldn't make it into the shower, when brushing my hair was an effort, when eating was just too hard. But I had, at the best of times, really dig deep into the core of my being, and truly my faith. My faith saved me, believing that tomorrow the sun will shine again, that things will get better. But when you are in the dark hole, nothing seems to make sense. Yeah. Nobody seems to make sense, because, you know, even if people are really out of just being gracious to say, I know what you're going through. No, they don't. No, they don't. You're the one that's lost twins at 20 weeks, yeah, which is what happened to me, losing my babies at 20 weeks in 2007. So there's a lot of loss in the book, and it's I'm vulnerable in the book, in my truth, yeah, and in standing in the light of my own truth, and so the part of, you know, writing about the loss was very, very cathartic, and I'm glad I write as I speak, and I'm sure you can, you know, you've got that sense that, yeah, as I speak is as I write, that women who are challenged and going through the darkest of hour, that, you know what, actually the sun will shine again, things will get better again, you'll find the strength to get into the shower again, and to be surrounded by people who love you, it's okay to lean on them at times.
Yeah. I mean, Basi, you speak about that sense of vulnerability, but you also mentioned the phrase taking back our power earlier. And the one thing I really want to fit in is a conversation about your decision to hold on to the power of your good name and reputation. And after 25 years in the public eye, in that fishbowl, you must be used to envy, to nastiness, to backstabbing, to competitiveness. There are elements of that to anybody who lives in the public eye. But you and Romeo have taken some pretty bold steps to fight back when a line has been crossed, or your image has been exploited, or somebody has posted stuff about you on social media that is just blatantly untrue. There's always that terrible conundrum that you run the risk of calling more attention to the lies and the negativity when you choose to fight back, which is, I think, the reason why a lot of people don't fight. Why was it so important to you to take these social media trolls on the way you have?
You know, you hit the nail on it, in that it's a conundrum. Yes, as a public figure, you've signed up for it. So it's par for the course that people at the best of times will take some cheap shots. People will make up stories, nasties, come up with the most diabolical of lies. But you can't just take on every single battle. I have businesses to run and children to raise. But when it comes to you insulting my children's legacy and their parents, that's when the rules of the game completely change. And that's where the rules of the game have completely changed with Jackie Pamuzi, spewing diabolical, vitriolic, outlandish lies about Nkosinathi, Khosi, and Bundle's parents. Yeah. That's when it's important, because you know what happens is that lies told into history live as truth. And when people who don't know you and their voices become louder in your story than your own voice, it's time to take your power back. And yes, we've chosen our battles with Romeo. And one of the cyberbullying and the cyberbullying attack upon our family is one that we will see to the finish line. We've thrown the entire book of the law and the justice system to be able to protect our good names. And I'm not only taking on this fight just for the Khumalos. It's for every single person who wakes up every single day to work hard, to build their businesses, to build their names, who trade on their integrity and their good standing. And then somebody just thinks will be a keyboard warrior sitting on Twitter Mountain and can be able to tweet whatever and then delete it as if that didn't happen. Not under my watch. Not when I'm responsible for three young lives who did not ask or choose to be born to public parents, but they and therefore equally we have responsibility to protect them. You know, for our kid to have to live with a lie and go to school every day with a lie over their heads, it's not fair, and it's not going to happen. Not under my watch. For my children, I will stand up and I will use my voice and I will make sure that justice is served.
And you will do so with a partner standing by your side who himself is such a wonderful role model to them. I mean, it was incredibly empowering to read your description of your relationship with your husband, Romeo, and the kind of father he has been to your children. I loved your comments in the book about the importance of fathers and the damage of absent fathers in South African history. You're so lucky to have an influence like that in your lives to fight those battles with you as well. And I don't want to give too much away. I want our listeners to come and read this book for themselves. And I know that they will draw so much from it. Let me just end with a lovely message that has come in on our WhatsApp line, saying simply that Basi is a beautiful person inside and out. And it's been so lovely to hear her speak. A lot of people simply saying that they can't wait to read the book, which I hope they will do soon. It is on shelves now. Basi, I mean, you must be incredibly proud to have done it after all those years of having the twinkle of the idea in your head, the hope of doing it. Your journey of hope is reality. How does that feel?
It is so overwhelming, Pippa. I tell you, I'm so daunted by it. But then I've been so humbled how my journey of hope has been so warmly received by every South African who's already had a copy in their hands. I see people on their Insta stories, people retweeting it, people sending me congratulations messages, and it's just well with me, and it is well with my soul that I was bold enough to tell my truth, took my own voice back, and in the process inspired a whole new generation and reignited hope in all of us.
Well, thank you for joining us to share that spark of new hope. Basi Tsanakumalo, it's been an absolute honor having you on the show today. The book is called Basi, My Journey of Hope. It's published by Penguin Random House and selling at a recommended price of 320 Rand for the hardcover. It is a book you will not want to put down. I literally read it cover to cover on the plane last week, and I'm so delighted to have had the chance to speak to the author. Basi, thank you so much for your time.